half of all people who are incarcerated in Illinois are back behind bars within 3 years. The Kewaunee Life Skills Reentry Center is trying to do something about it with programs like job training, art classes, even gardening.
We got chrysanthemums. We got a couple of mystery flowers because we don't know exactly what they is they was giving to us, and some seeds that they had no name to us, but we got some cabbage. We got tomato.
It's Ivan Carmona speaking to WBEZ. We'll hear from him and reporter Miles Bryan. Plus,
Chia.
Chia Pet, the pottery that grows. It's fun and easy. Soak your chia, spread the seeds, keep it watered, and watch it grow.
The mastermind behind that jingle joins us in studio, U of I grad Joe Pidot. And we'll get the latest in state politics as lawmakers and the governor continue to debate Illinois' next state budget. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay with us. We'll get started after the latest news. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. It's that time of year. This past weekend, U of I had its commencement ceremony, and as thousands of students graduate across Illinois this month, they're hearing words of wisdom and advice from those who have come before them. One of those people is Joseph Pidot. He's the guy behind this.
There's a new pet.
Chia.
Chia Pet, the pottery that grows. It's fun and easy. Soak your chia, spread the seeds, keep it watered, and watch it grow. And now grow a whole collection of fun with Chia teddy bears, puppies, kittens, rams, bulls. There's even a chia tree to keep your pets company.
Presenting the Clapper. Let your appliances turn on and off just by clapping. Clap on the music. It's easy. Just plug the Clapper into any household outlet, then plug in your lamp, TV, or stereo.
Clap on! Clap off! Clap on, clap off, the Clapper.
If you're too young to remember those jingles, that was for the Chia Pet and the Clapper. Those were created by Joe Pidot after he graduated from the U of I in 1955. And as soon as he finished school, he headed to Chicago for work, and he never had a chance to participate in his graduation ceremony. 63 years later, this past weekend, he did have a chance to walk in the College of Media's commencement ceremony and actually be handed a diploma. That was yesterday. This morning, he's in our Urbana studios with us. Joseph Pidot, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here with me.
It's my pleasure.
So when we think about the Clapper, we were talking about this morning. That technology was really ahead of its time, you know, having audio commands for different things. Now we think we have Siri and all of these smart devices. How did you first hear about the Clapper?
Well, I received a phone call from a gentleman in Toronto. And he said that he has a product called Great American Turn-On, and he wanted to meet with me. So I told him I was going to be in New York a few weeks later, and we could set a time to meet. Well, I met with him and found out that he was a salesman and his partner was the engineer, and they came up with this concept, which was the original Clapper. The only problem is they were con men, and they weren't really interested in making it work. They raised $500,000 from doctors and other people in Toronto, figuring it wouldn't work. They'd pocket $250,000 and spend $250,000. And so they got my name from the Gillette people, which I represented at the time. So we created a commercial, and we picked a few markets. I think it was Washington, D.C., and Chicago. The problem is it blew out the television sets. Fortunately, I had enough insurance to cover. And so I took him to court in Canada, and the judge says,
here. Yeah.
And the judge says, look, we're going to bankrupt them, and I can't get your money back. I already spent $30,000 of my money on television advertising. But the concept works. So I spent the next 2 years with engineers that were working for me to take the idea, the concept, and make it work. Then once we had it working, we had to come up with a name. So I invited some friends over for dinner and said, the whole purpose of the dinner is to come up with a name. So I already had the Clapper in mind, but I let everybody give many, many names. And then I said, what about the Clapper? And they said, oh, no, it's too close to the clap, which is a venereal disease, and that's not good. I said, only if you have a dirty mind. So we went with the Clapper because it's demonstrable and never regretted it.
And so that was after Chia Pet, right?
That was after Chia Pet. Chia Pet was the first.
Which I think is really an improbable business success story, the Chia Pet. Can you tell us how that came about as well?
Sure. At the time, the largest drug chain on the West Coast was a organization, the Thrifty Drug Chain. The houseware show was always in Chicago at that time in January. So I bumped into, while getting coffee, the head buyer of Thrifty Drug, and I asked him, what was his bestseller? And he said, a stupid item called Chia Pet. He said, we just tried it for the first time, and it's selling. I said, what is this? He tried to describe. He said, look, better yet, I'll put a catalog sheet in the mail. So as an advertising agency, and the company was in Chicago, and that was their first product. The company was basically in the wholesale hose business, garden hose business. So I approached the gentleman, and I said, I'd like to represent you on the advertising. He said, no, I have Eichhoff in Chicago handling it. I said, what about your distribution? We're happy to do that. He said, no, we have a network of reps and distributors. But he was complaining he was losing at least a dollar on every one he sold. So I said, if you ever want to sell it, let me know. So I called him the next year to tell him how well his product was moving. He says, you're not helping me. You're giving me more bad news. I'm just running out of money. He said, are you still interested in buying the product? I said, yes. Now, this was on a Monday. He said, when will you be in Chicago? I said, what about Thursday, this Thursday? So I flew to Chicago, and I made him an offer. And he said, that offer is ridiculous. I said, I've never knowingly cheated anybody, so here's the names and phone numbers of all my competitors. And if I'm the highest bidder, will you sell to me? He said, yes. So he said, how long will you be in Chicago? I said, how long will it take you to contact everybody? He says, well, you stay in Chicago until Tuesday. That gave him 2 days. So I said, sure. So I called him Tuesday, and he said, what are you doing for lunch? I said, I guess I'm having it with you. So he said, you bought it. And he said, by the way, your offer was twice as much as the next offer. So I bought it, but I didn't know there was other problems. The gentleman that was getting all his, having made in Mexico all his Chia Pets, insisted that he handle the making of the product. I said, no, that's not part of the deal. What I want to do is go to Mexico. I'd like to know about any product we have from where they get the clay and how it's made and so forth. And he objected to that. He said, that's what you pay me 10% for. I said, no, you don't understand. If you want to do business with me and to continue the deal, I have to go to Mexico. So he said, okay. So he arranged to get me a room in Oaxaca. That's in the center of Mexico. And then the town was about 20 miles out of Oaxaca. So by this time, I didn't trust him. So rather than arrive Saturday night, I arrived Friday night. And I noticed there was a farmer's market, so I walked over to it, and I saw several makers of similar Chia Pet items, and I asked Cuatro Peso how much, and I found out that what they're selling it was a fraction of what he was selling it to.
Ah.
So.
And people were buying them there also.
And, yeah. Go ahead.
So how did you, were you surprised at the success of the Chia Pet, of how it became this really popular, I think, especially holiday item?
Yes and no. People were buying it, and they were buying a really a crude Chia Pet. So what I had is I had all the quality control, all of the four legs touched the ground, no burns on the body, gave them quality chia seeds and so on and so on. And we couldn't keep it in stock. I remember there's the Walgreens store on State Street was reordering twice a week.
In Chicago. Okay.
And I was saying, are people stealing them? And he said, no. He says, as soon as they open up the box, people are in line waiting to get all the chia pets. There was 16 in a box. So we had a real winner.
You had a runner that lasted a long time. And, you know, Joe, we always talk about rags to riches stories. You went from running away from home and being on your own at age 16 to becoming this incredibly successful businessman and philanthropist. I wanted to ask you how much of your success you think comes down to believing in yourself and your abilities.
a large part of it. I don't, when I, everything I do is not successful, and I learn from my failures, and I have a ground rule. I allow myself 24 hours to cry and moan and complain, and then I'll get up and kick butt again and harder than ever, and it's worked for me. So I've learned from my mistakes. So mistakes, as far as I'm concerned, are positive. If you don't take any risk, there's no rewards. So it's important that people believe in themselves, take the risk, follow their dreams, and if they fail, try again.
I read a few more of your rules for success that you have, and number two of them is never lie. Why do you think that's especially important when you're doing business? It sounds like you had a couple folks who you were in business with who were not so honest.
Many times, but I also haven't got the greatest memory. And the truth is a constant. You do not have to have a good memory if you stay to the truth. So my attitude is tell the people a nice way. If you don't want to answer the question, that it's none of their business, but in a nice way, or tell the truth. And it has worked for me all my life.
Not just in business, but in life, it sounds like.
Yes.
My guest is Joe Pidot. He's the guy who took the Clapper and the Chia Pet to such success throughout the world. And we're talking to him because although he graduated from the University of Illinois in 1955, he went straight to work and he never had a chance to participate in the graduation ceremony. What was that like yesterday, Joe, to walk in the College of Media's commencement ceremony and actually be handed a diploma?
Well, there was a dinner Friday night. I was participating in the entire university graduation on Saturday and then adjourned school on Sunday. I'll tell you, each was a very emotional thing, and I find my eyes wet on every occasion. I would say that it's been the most memorable weekend of my life, and I'm 86 years young now. So I said, I think that says something.
Why is that?
I never expected it. My advisor said I was okay with the hours, and then he called the week beforehand, graduation, and said you can't graduate. So I had to go to Roosevelt in the summer in Chicago for 3 extra hours, and I had my diploma mailed to me. And I never expected to ever be invited back, but Marla McDuffie of University of Illinois contacted me, and that's how it all started. So I give her credit for setting this all up for me, and I appreciate it.
As you think about all the students who are graduating, the students who graduated not just at the University of Illinois this past weekend, but all the students who are graduating across the state, what advice do you have from them when you think about when you left campus and you finished when you finished your degree, as you're saying, it was 63 summers ago. What advice do you have for this year's graduates?
Well, number one, there's no bottom, because you're at the bottom now. You can only go up. So believe in yourself, follow your dreams, and expect to work 25 hours a day, 8 days a week, and be happy. A very wise man told me a long time ago, who was executive vice president of the Parker Pen Company, there's three things in life every human being needs. One, something to do and do it well. Two, recognition. Three, someone to love. It's not necessarily in that order, but that's what he said. So that's some advice I might give. But follow your dreams. Don't let anybody say you can't do it. You can do any damn thing you want. All you got to do is put the effort behind it.
And that led to you having not just the Chia Pet, but the Clapper are both, those are both Smithsonian artifacts for advertising, right?
I was contacted, I guess, about a dozen years ago by the name of John Fleckner, who was the head curator. He called me up and he said that by committee, they've picked 5 American icons to be in the museum. And by committee, the Chia Pet was chosen. And have you got the original? I said, yes. Will you give it to the Smithsonian? I said, yes. And he said, will you give all the original material to the Library of Congress? I said, yes. And then I asked him, what were the other ones? And he said they have the original Betty Crocker cookbook, the original can of Spam, the Clapper. I said, that's mine. He didn't even know it was mine. And I can't remember the fifth one. So I'm still pinching myself. It's just tremendous.
One of the things that you mentioned in your rules for success, and I thought I would just share this one, is if you have an idea, follow through on it. Do you think that's what happens with a lot of folks? They just don't follow through on their ideas?
Yes. And they're discouraged because there's so many people that say, oh, it can't be done. It's been done before. You know, follow your dreams. I mean, if you listen to everybody and you look at them, are they successful? Also, surround yourself with people that are smarter than you, and they'll carry you up. If you're the kingpin and everybody else is not as smart as you, they will eventually carry you down. So it's very important you surround yourself, because life is a learning process. And frankly, for me, the older I get, the realer I think I'm more stupid now than when I graduated college. It's a learning process. So keep learning.
That's University of Illinois graduate Joe Pidot, the guy behind Chia Pet and the Clapper. He graduated from the university in 1955. Joe, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. I really appreciate it.
One more thing. I've now turned into a philanthropist, so the Chia Pet is now going to help students that otherwise couldn't afford to get into the University of Illinois to help them get in, as well as many, many other students. So my foundations are all about students in need that have the quality, the aptitude, but can't get in because of circumstances beyond their control.
Thanks for sharing that. That's Joe Pidot. Back to the 21st. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Nearly half of all people in Illinois who are released from prison are back behind bars within 3 years. It's a statistic well known to both prison advocates and state officials alike. One prison in Northwest Illinois is trying to change that. It's called the Kewaunee Life Skills Reentry Center, and it offers programs like art classes, job training, even gardening. Prisoners inside the facility are also allowed much greater freedom of movement. It's been open for little more than a year. There are currently 220 inmates there and more than 1,500 pending applications. In a few minutes, we're going to be speaking with someone who was formerly incarcerated at Kewaunee, as well as a WBEZ reporter who first worked on the story about this facility. But first, I'd like to start with John Baldwin, director of the Illinois Department of Corrections. Director Baldwin, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
What's the Illinois Department of Corrections thinking behind opening a facility like Kewaunee?
Our thinking was very simple. We, as you mentioned in your lead-in, we have an appalling recidivism rate, and we can do better. So we created the nation's first life skills reentry center for medium and high risk and need offenders, to try to moderate our recidivism rate. Evidence has proven for years the more money you put into high risk, high need, medium need offenders, the better results you will have. And we are trying to do that in this state. And I have no doubt over time we will be very successful.
Are there lessons that you're learning at Kewaunee that you'd like to apply to other correctional facilities throughout the state?
Almost every day, we're in the process, based on our Kewaunee experience, of changing virtually every treatment program we offer in the Department of Corrections to become evidence-based, as are the Kewaunee programs. We are looking very strongly at compartmentalizing various programs in certain institutions, so we'll have more offenders with a certain need clumped in one or two or three institutions instead of scattered, more focused programming, which is what we're doing at the Kewanee Institution. And we are fundamentally moving towards an outcome-based system of corrections to where we know which programs work and which programs do not. And we're stopping those that do not work and expanding those that do.
And when you say evidence-based, what in particular, can you give us an example?
Sure. We are the Kewanee Life Skills Reentry Center is being studied by the University of Illinois Chicago over a 3-year period. And then we're going to look at that data and see where we need to improve. We're going to see what works. And then it'll be an ongoing yearly evaluation after that. We have to start doing a better job of knowing the outcomes for the programs that we provide to people sentenced to the Department of Corrections.
And at this point, Director Baldwin, do you feel like you have sufficient funding in order to do that, to be able to ascertain outcomes and study these things?
Yes. There is full funding in the governor's budget for the next fiscal year, FY19, for both Murfreesboro and our facility at Kewanee. And we have a very robust partnership with the University of Chicago, who we are providing data to and have for a long time, and that we're marrying that up with data from the Department of Employment Security and the Department of Human Services. And the University of Chicago is just starting to crank that data out, and it should give us a much better view of long-term what success and what problems are the people who are sentenced to us have once they are released from Illinois Corrections.
And so when you think about success, are you thinking particularly of recidivism rates, or are there other metrics you're going to be looking at as well?
Right now, it's strictly recidivism rates, but we are bringing up a system that will look at how long somebody who has left us keeps the job, how many contacts they have with the human services type agencies in Illinois, and what becomes of them not only in 3 years, but in 5 and 6 and 10. And we're trying to make sure that we return citizens much more able to cope with the realities of life in Illinois than when they came to us.
I'm speaking with John Baldwin, director of the Illinois Department of Corrections. And I mentioned at the beginning of this that there's about 220 inmates currently at Kewanee Life Skills Reentry. There's more than 1,500 pending applications. Do you have space to add more people to the Kewanee facility right now?
Yes. We have enough to hold 600 people. And we are slowly moving our way towards that 600 number. At Kewanee, we do have a lot of applications, which we're very pleased with. The selection process is through a double-blind method that is being monitored by Harvard University and the University of Illinois at Chicago. So we get a good pool of data in which to look at what our outcomes are, and hopefully we can replicate this not only in Illinois, but with the Harvard group is looking to take it nationally if there is some positive outcome. So we're very excited about this. It's truly, it's going to be studied in a very, very rigid fashion.
I know that you also recently opened a similar facility you mentioned in Murfreesboro, and I understand there are plans mm-hmm. for a women's facility. What's the timeline for that, Director
yes.
Baldwin?
We've just opened up the Murfreesboro, which is for minimum security men. The Logan, which is our women's operation, is going to be it is functioning now in sort of a smaller version, but I would expect sometime midsummer you will see the version that closely mirrors our effort at Kewanee. And depending on what type of job skills we can get at the Logan operation, we may be moving some of the females to the Kewanee operation so they can benefit from some of the opportunities there.
One last question for you, Director Baldwin, just about the cost of all of this. You mentioned the funding for Kewaunee. I believe the number for the daily cost per inmate is about $171, which compares to $72 at other facilities. What's your response to someone who looks at this and says, look, Illinois is not in the best financial shape. Can we really be afford to be investing this extra money in our prison system?
First off, as we add more and more people to the Kewaunee population, that number will move down towards the $72 per day. It's a lot of staff and not a lot of people in the program, so you're going to get a cost overstatement. I think the next 2 years you're going to see that number more closely match the $72. It will never get lower than 72 because we are spending a lot of money on programs there. The bottom line is we have to do something to fix the recidivism rate. It actually is 43% now, but states surrounding us are in the 20s and low 30s, and we need to improve our outcomes, and we need to stop creating victims, because basically every time somebody fails and comes back to us, there is a victim, and we have to be cognizant of that. We have to do a better job.
That's John Baldwin, the director of the Illinois Department of Corrections. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it, Director.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
We've got on the line with us now Ivan Carmona, who was formerly incarcerated at Kewaunee. And I mentioned Miles Bryan, the WBEZ reporter, who just was did a story about this last week. Miles, Ivan, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Ivan, can I start with you? What were you feeling when you found out that you got into Kewaunee? Ivan?
Come in. I thought it was unreal when I got into Kewaunee, when I even got considered to go to Kewaunee.
How did you hear about it? Yeah, how did you hear about it?
Well, a counselor came to me and said that the people in Springfield want you to go to Kewaunee to help get your life on track.
Can you describe the difference for us, Ivan, between what it was like at previous facilities you were at and then when you got to Kewaunee, what that was like?
So when I was going to school in Mount Sterling, I got strip searched every day just to go, just for me wanting to go to school. It was like they was against that type of program. But when I got to Kewaunee, the teachers and the staff, everybody was for us to go to school. They was trying to push us to go to school. It's a big difference coming from Mount Sterling and going to Kewaunee.
It certainly sounds like it. Miles, you toured this facility for a story that we mentioned you reported for WBEC. By the way, we'll tweet out that story if you'd like to hear that. Can you describe what you saw, Miles? What does this building look like? How does it compare with what we normally think about when we see a prison?
Yeah, well, Kewaunee's actually it's in the site of a former juvenile correctional center, so it's laid out a little differently. You approach it, and you do see this sort of big barbed wire rings on the fence around it. So it has a similar correctional feel to something you might imagine a more typical prison. But inside it feels like, I think in the story I call it somewhere in between like a middle school and a community college, because there's all these classes, and then there's these big, bright, cartoon-like murals that inmates had painted on the walls with inspiration. And pictures from the movie Minions, or the little Minions from that series. And it feels sort of airy and open, and you see inmates like Ivan just sort of walking around, doing their thing, painting. Something that struck me, that just stayed with me, was that inmates, when they were free, could just go work out. They could go lift weights or do what they wanted in the gym. So there wasn't that yard time or that time that was designated to work out like you might think of in a more traditional prison atmosphere.
Ivan, how do you think that freedom changed your experience, the ability to choose to do those sorts of things?
I was able to focus my energy in good things like schooling, gardening. I was able to do other things that being able to socialize with all type of different people.
And for you, when you're thinking about the schooling, Ivan, was the gardening was something that really made a difference for you?
Yes.
What was it about gardening? Yeah, what was it about it that you really like?
With gardening? So when I started doing gardening, it made me feel free inside of jail. Like it made me feel I was connected with the garden. So when I was working in that garden and I was building relationships with other people, with staff members that you don't normally do with other staff members in other facilities, we're not allowed to do those things. We're not allowed to build a relationship with other staff members. But in Kiwani, we able to do that. That changed everything for me and how I look at staff.
Can I just add, Ivan is... His level of dedication to the garden, specifically at Kiwani, is pretty amazing. I called Ivan up after he got out. I didn't have a quote. I think the first thing he told me was that he had called back to Kiwani to make sure that his crop had come in. Okay, they had been able to.
Yeah, Ivan, you called back. Which crop were you most concerned about, Ivan?
Well, the produce. Got to make sure the produce is being done for. So the community, Kiwani, can get the produce. The kids outside that go to the food pantries so they can be able to get some in their bellies.
Oh, so they're growing. So at Kiwani, some of the produce is being donated to food pantries in the area.
Yes.
And yes, you're living, wow, Ivan, you're living in Marion now. What are you doing there?
Well, right now, I'm driving down to Cairo. We taking 30 bags of topsoil. Some frames, some 1x6s, some 1x8s, down to Cairo to build them to get the garden beds ready.
You're working in gardening now.
Yes, through Lutheran Social Service. If it wasn't for Kiwani, me going to Kiwani, me doing this thing in Cairo Lutheran Social Service, this would not be possible.
Miles, what did you hear from other inmates? Does it match up with what we're hearing from Ivan as well?
Yeah, I mean, there was this real universal sense of, you know, excitement and gratitude about the place.
It looks like we've lost Miles there. Let's try to get him back. Oh, Miles, yeah, it looks like we're having a problem with your line, so we'll try to reconnect with you in just a minute. Ivan, can I just ask about the idea of the cost of this? I wonder from your perspective as someone who was incarcerated, if you feel like we were just hearing Director Baldwin talk about the costs of investing in something like this versus the alternative. For you, why do you think it's important to make that kind of investment?
I think it's very important, because if they don't invest in us having these type of programs, we're going to go right back to the same things we're doing. We're going to be right back on them streets. And it's not going to be right. It's going to be the same thing. We coming back home. We going back to the communities. We going to stay next to you. You got to give us something different instead of putting us right back in the cities of Chicago or the major cities with high crime, because we're going to be right back into it. Got to give us something.
That's Ivan Carmona, formerly incarcerated at the Kiwani Life Skills Reentry Center, telling us now about his work in gardening. We're going to take a break. When we come back, hopefully we'll see if we can get Miles back for a minute or two. Ivan, thank you for sharing your story with us. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for tuning in. My guest is Miles Bryan. He's a reporter with WBEZ, Chicago Public Media. We've been talking about a story he just did about the Kewaunee Life Skills Reentry Center. Earlier, we heard from the director of the Illinois Department of Corrections about this facility, as well as someone who was formerly incarcerated there. We were just talking to Ivan Carmona. There's more than 220 inmates currently there, 1,500 pending applications for this facility. Miles, I just wanted to ask, in terms of, sounds like there are lots of inmates in Illinois who are trying to get into this facility. Is this a place where there are probably a lot of Departments of Correction staff that also want to work there?
I know staffing has been an issue at Kewaunee. It's hard to find enough folks to do this. I imagine there is interest in working there, but, Kewaunee's in a relatively small rural community in western Illinois, and it's like other corrections facilities in that it's scattered across the state in smaller communities. So I think as they try and scale up, depending on how hard they try to scale up, finding enough staff is going to be a problem.
And what have you heard from prisoners' rights advocates about Kewaunee-style facilities like this? And I'm just curious, we heard Director Baldwin talking about how he's hoping this will be a model for other states. Is that the case, you think, based on what prisoners' rights advocates are saying?
Yeah, the interesting thing is, sometimes this is a rare story where I reached out to outside experts and folks were like, this is a good idea. This is what we wanted the Department of Corrections to do for a long time. We're really happy about this. The big sort of tension here, as I see it, is cost.
Yeah, certainly cost will be right. A huge factor here. So thanks for that. That's Miles Bryan with WBEZ. We will tweet out his story if you want to hear a little bit more about this facility. Miles, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Speaking of cost, it's Monday, which means it's time for us to talk state politics. And cost is on everyone's mind because it's budget season. State lawmakers are entering the final few weeks of their annual session, trying to accomplish the goal of approving a budget, something that took more than 700 days last time around. We're hoping things will go more smoothly, but joining us with their best guesses to that are reporters John O'Connor from the Associated Press and Doug Finke with the State Journal Register, both of them on the line from Springfield. John, Doug, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Hi, Nyla.
Glad to be here.
So when it comes to passing a budget, obviously time is of the essence. Both Democrats and Republicans, especially in this election year, no one wants to be responsible for stalling. John, you recently wrote about how the governor saying Democrats are moving too slowly. What's happening there?
Nothing surprising out of the governor's mouth to hear him say that the other side is stalling. And if he were around 10, 15, 20 years ago, he would realize that on May 14th, it's still fairly early. these deals in the past would get done maybe under cloak of darkness, but within the last couple of weeks. And of course, this is a governor, as you mentioned, that went through a 700-plus day stalemate on the budget from 2015 to last year, and it's kind of strange to hear him say that things are moving too slowly. But this is the typical political ploy by either side, really.
To the other side, Doug, you reported that Democrats say it's the governor who's stalling action. Do you feel like this is just kind of one of those, this is what we're going to hear in an election year, both of them are going to talk about stalling? What do you think, Doug?
Yeah, I think so. It's been, the governor was the first one out of the gate saying that he thought the Democrats were interested in dragging this out as much as possible, possibly running into an overtime session. I think the Democrats finally got tired of listening to that, and so they countered with the fact that the governor in his budget proposal had several ideas that he wanted enacted to save money, like shifting pension costs to local school districts and cutting employee health insurance benefits. But the Democrats pointed out that even though he proposed those things, they have never been put in bill form so it can be considered by the General Assembly. So who, in fact, is actually dragging their feet on this issue?
And so let's get to some of the nitty-gritty of what we think will be involved with these negotiations, Doug. In particular, what do you think is going to be, what are the big items that are either going to be a source of contention? Well, let's just start with contention between House Speaker Michael Madigan and the Democrats and Governor Rauner and the Republicans.
Well, I'm not sure that there should be a lot of contention in the sense that, as many people pointed out, a year ago they voted to raise the state income tax. And that was really the crucial vote because it injected billions more revenue into the state. They've got that cushion now to work with. There's always going to be some disagreements between Republicans and Democrats on exactly where to direct those revenues. But I think, essentially the heavy lifting was done last year, and if they're willing to work together, I don't think it's any kind of insurmountable task to have a reasonable budget done by the end of May.
Well, that's good news. So, John, can I ask about, we haven't heard Governor Rauner talk about his turnaround agenda so much this year. That's something that we heard so much about in the past couple of years. What's going on with that?
I think he realizes that in a pinch, the pinch being an election year, that it didn't go anywhere. It fell on deaf ears for the first 3 years. He made a budget contingent on some of these so-called turnaround agenda ideas, whether they be a property tax freeze or workers' compensation reform. He realizes that that this is what led to the stalemate for 2 years. I mean, his insistence and on achieving those things, the Democrats just balked and continued to balk, and we had no stalemate. Now he realizes that this year, if he doesn't have a budget, he could really be hung out to dry, I think, in the election. So
that's why we're not probably hearing as much. Sure.
Making that tied in.
Mm-hmm. You know, Doug, can I ask about, to that point of, we haven't heard very much from the governor recently about unions, which is certainly something that we heard a lot of in the first few years of the administration. I wanted to ask you about some step increases for members of AFSCME. What's going on with that?
Step increases are additional raises that are given to people in the early parts of their career in the state government. If in the first 7 to 10 years that you work for the state, you get additional pay raises, the idea being that helps keep the workforce around, and then you don't have to retrain people constantly. When the AFSCME contract expired, the previous one expired in June of 2015, the governor stopped paying, or the administration stopped paying those step increases. AFSCME went to court and said that basically under labor law, all the provisions of a previous contract stay in effect while a new one is being negotiated. The courts have agreed with the union, and so they sent this issue back to the State Labor Relations Board to work out. The point is there's thousands of state workers out there who are entitled to these additional pay raises, and now the Labor Relations Board has to figure out a way to actually implement that. They have asked both the administration and the union to provide some briefing papers on it. The union believes that's kind of a stalling tactic, but nonetheless, that's what the Labor Relations Board has ruled, so we'll have to see how quickly this gets resolved.
And see how that gets implemented. John, we also had some movement this morning on the 72-hour gun waiting bill. Governor Rauner this morning at the Illinois State Police Forensic Science Lab in Chicago made an announcement on that House bill that would require a 72-hour waiting period before buying an assault-style weapon. What did he say?
Currently, the law is that to buy a handgun, you can make the purchase, but you have to wait 72 hours before you pick that up. I think some members of the legislature found it unusual that that did not apply to long guns, rifles, shotguns, and, of course, the subject of every gun debate these days, the assault-style weapon, a rapid-fire-type rifle. And so this legislation extended the waiting period for assault weapons, and all guns would be subject to a 72-hour waiting period. The governor approves of that idea, but he still vetoed the bill. He used the amendatory veto power given to him by the Constitution to rewrite the legislation. And what he has done, he has said all along, while the legislature has debated several types of gun bills, that he wants a comprehensive approach. So in this bill, he wrote in additional measures, and they do include some of the things that the Democrats have been pushing for and actually have been bipartisan support for, a ban on bump stocks. But he's also added a provision that would reinstate the death penalty, which we know was eliminated in 2011 in Illinois. But it would reinstate the death penalty for those who murder police officers and those who commit mass murders. He said that I don't know all the details, but there is a higher level of proof needed so that we make certain that we are not putting to death people who didn't commit the crime, which was the problem with the death penalty in Illinois that led to its abolition. Now, but he says that people who take the life of a law enforcement officer or commit the atrocity of a mass murder should be prepared to give up their own lives for that.
We just have about a minute left. Doug, I just wanted to ask you what other headlines you're paying attention to. Announcement this morning that State Senator Daniel Biss is now all in for J.B. Pritzker and is formally going to announce his endorsement of J.B. Pritzker today. Is that kind of what you're keeping an eye on? I don't know what else you're looking at.
Well, keeping an eye on that, and also the U.S. Supreme Court ruled today that states can implement sports betting. And that has been an issue that's been on the horizon in Illinois for a while. There's been efforts to ensure that these fantasy sports betting operations can be legal in the state. There's also, gambling interests have been watching the Supreme Court decision very closely, so we'll have to see if there's an effort on the part of the legislature to still try to implement something in Illinois in the last 3 weeks we have in the session.
Now, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that, with sports betting across Illinois. I want to thank Doug Finke for being with us, State House reporter for the State Journal Register, and John O'Connor, one of his counterparts at the Associated Press, both of them on the line from Springfield. Gentlemen, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up on tomorrow's program for Muslims all around the world, tomorrow for North Americans, it marks the first day of Ramadan and the beginning of a month of fasting during the day. It's also a time to raise money and give back. We're going to be hearing from Islamic organizations all across Illinois about the work they're doing to help people in need. We'd love to hear from you. If you observe Ramadan, what does this time of year mean for you? What are your plans for the next month? You can tweet us at 21STShow. You can also always leave us a voicemail. Our hotline number is 217-300-2121. Again, that's 217-300-2121. You can also always email us. All of that information is at our website, 21stshow.org. We're produced by Libby Foster, Robin Lynn, and Alan Montesilio. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. Special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 20 Verses is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Have a good day.